I bought walking shoes.
Walking shoes?
Well, technically they're running shoes.
Does that make you old?
Well, they're running shoes, but I'm going to use them solely for the purpose of walking. But I tried to get walking shoes. So for Toronto, I don't have sneakers that are either comfortable or are not running shoes.
We got to go to my favorite shoe store in Toronto.
I already bought them.
Oh, okay.
And spent a good amount on them. So I'm good. Thanks.
All right.
I got the MBTs, the Maasai Balance
Trainer. Oh, those? They're like, that are...
These are less rocky.
If you set it, it'll just rock by itself. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maasai Balance Trainers.
Okay. I've always wanted a pair of those, mm-hmm. but I have weird, fucked up feet.
Yes,
and so,
you do.
Yeah, they do not fit me. There are only like certain brands of shoes that will work for me.
Is it a width? Is it a toe box?
It's a toe thing. It's a toe thing.
Mm.
I need more of a squared toe.
You have hammer toes?
No.
Toes?
No.
You have triangle toes?
No.
Do you have pyramid head toes?
Yes.
Okay.
That is what I have.
Bam. Yeah, yes. I knew I was going to get to it eventually. Pyramid head toes, man. They're the worst.
No, there's like maybe three or four different shoe brands that I can wear.
Keen? Keen's one of them, right?
Nope.
Oh. What can you wear then?
Nunbush.
Okay.
Some that I can wear.
Yeah.
These are from frickin' Eddie Bauer.
Wow.
So I don't know where the hell these were made, but they more or less work. Yeah, I'm sure they're made in China.
Wait.
All these are made in China.
I can hear little children's tears. Yeah, they're from China.
Jeez.
Enjoy your shoes.
I do. I find a pair that fits and I buy like three or four of them.
I guess you'd have to with that kind of weird.
Yeah.
That's a weird limitation to have.
But yeah, and I've seen these rocking shoes and like that looks really comfortable.
They are.
And I try them on like, nope. And I'll try them on like once every 3 or 4 years because I kind of forget.
Do you try the different? Because a lot of different people make them now. Do you try the different makes?
I probably try. When you say 3 or 4 different people make them,
well, like Skechers had them, but MBT was the ones who started.
Yeah, Skechers doesn't work. MBT doesn't work.
Okay.
I kind of suspect they're all like the same sort of. Right. They're all probably made in the same place with different.
You need to write a letter to Nunn and or Bush and be like, "Yo, guys, you got to get on this rocking thing."
So, have you actually tried these on before?
Oh, I had them in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I towards the end of the waitering, it got so bad. Like I was just in pretty excruciating pain. My back, my feet, everything hurt. And one of the waitresses had them and swore by them. And they were like $250. So
mm-hmm.
I was like really hesitating. I had gone to I'd done the Danskos, which are the giant clogs. And they helped for a while, but even they couldn't help for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Or could only help for so long. So I asked her and she's like, they're really expensive, but they're really worth it. And I got them and they took some real getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it would definitely be a teetering issue for a while when I was pouring wine.
Oh, okay.
So I would lean over the table to pour wine, and I would sort of just keep leaning. And I would try to play. I got good at counterbalancing with my butt, but it was weird. But they were, like, extreme. Like, there's different gradations.
Okay.
But do you know the whole story, like, the behind the name MBT and everything?
No.
So Maasai is a desert, and it's believed possibly to be the cradle of civilization. So it's one of the earliest places where human beings walked. And so these foot, these podiatrists, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Foot so you're just saying pediatrician that I was.
No.
Podiatrist.
Po. It is a po. Yeah.
Po. Podunk dietrist.
Or a ped.
Podunk dietitian.
Yes.
Yeah. They did all this research and found that an extreme rock to your shoe was the closest thing you could get to walking barefoot in sand. So that's where the name Maasai Balance Trainer comes from. MBT.
So it's like walking in sand.
It's like walking in sand. And it's not. It's like walking with a round fucking shoe. But it is actually quite pleasant. And I haven't had any in years, because I haven't been waiting tables in
mm-hmm.
a really fucking long time. And those shoes lasted a while, but I eventually threw them away.
So when you're standing with these, and it seems like these would be more of a benefit to somebody who stands a lot.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it seems like when you're standing with, from what you've told me, when you're standing with these, you're sort of constantly adjusting. You're constantly shifting the weight. So you're not just planted on your
heel. You are forced to have good posture.
Mm-hmm.
Because the act of keeping yourself upright on a fairly limited contact point causes you to have a better core, like strength. So they are a bit of a workout.
Okay.
And the ones I got are running shoes, very lightweight. The ones I had were super heavy, super curved. I mean, these weighed like a fucking pound each. They were nuts. The ones I got are way less curved, and they're a lot lighter. But I figure they'll be pleasant to walk in.
Okay.
You know, we're in Toronto. But yeah, I in the end, I really liked the other shoes.
Hmm.
You know, and I wore them even after I stopped waiting tables. I was like, these are pleasant. And when you spend that fucking much on a pair of shoes, you want to really wear them into the ground.
Well, yeah, of course. So what's interesting to me is that this is very similar to the kneeling chair that I don't have. They're super expensive ones that are meant that they're built to kind of rock while mm-hmm. you're kneeling mm-hmm. in them,
so that you can't have an easy non like motionless right. centered state.
And that's part of the reasoning behind them is that you are again constantly in motion.
Mm-hmm.
You're never gonna get stuck in one
position.
It forces your body to continuously adjust throughout the day while you're sitting.
It's not an uncommon tactic.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I'm not a doctor or anything, but it makes sense.
But a display went on TV.
Yeah.
Hi, we are Buddies in Space.
Oh my God.
This guy is...
Yes, Michael Smith, and you are...
And Michael Carassi.
It really went a while before that.
It was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone knows about walking barefoot in the Maasai Desert now. Come on, they're thanking us. Listen. They just thanked us.
Hmm. I'm thanking this drink.
This drink is delicious.
It's very nice. I'm not a big, you know, sweet fan or sweet drink fan, but I am really enjoying this.
When it tastes like a gingered apple pie?
Yeah, which is what it is, really.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, you brought this over two nights ago, and you were like, hey, I have this apple pie moonshine.
No, I mentioned it before that. I mentioned it in Hangouts to you. I said, hey, I just tried the apple pie moonshine. And it was delicious. And well, you were, it was a Hangouts tweet to you. And you seemed a little bit skeptical about that.
Was that the same day or was that early on?
That was like a weekend ago.
Okay. It's been a lot of booze since then.
Okay, sure. But I tweeted you about it, or not tweeted, Hangout chatted you.
Tweeted.
Whatever.
What are we, tweeters?
Yeah, we're not. We're not tweeters.
Are we on Tweet Space?
No.
Tweet Book?
Tweet Out?
Tweet Out?
Hang Tweet?
Tweet Gram? hang Tweet?
So, yeah, I mentioned it to you and you seemed a little bit dubious because I tried it, I sampled it, and I thought it was delicious.
Well, moonshine, like, man, I've had moonshine before, and it's like,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, when you hear great. About moonshine...
I don't think bathtub with a trip with three X's on a cider jug, but, you know, like, I've had actual moonshine, it's not great, usually.
Yes, it's usually kind of a harsh flavor,
yeah.
More... alcohol,
more like kerosene,
yeah, more fluid. Kerosene-y. but I tried this, and this is from the Black Button Distillery here in New Rochester, a fine local business,
and they have bottled gold. But the funny yeah. thing is, I forgot about that, not tweet. and my brother and sister-in-law came over Friday night,
uh-huh.
to watch The Room.
Okay, right.
Because they had never seen it, and our moratorium on The Room has ended. We had watched it so many times in a short period of time, we just couldn't stand it anymore. But that ended, we were excited to show it to them. And my sister-in-law was telling me about apple pie moonshine and how good it was.
Was it this apple pie moonshine, though?
Are there many apple pie
moonshine? I think I've seen more than one.
Honestly. Oh, really? Okay. Well,
maybe
I just assumed it was this
good.
One. Well, she tasted it somewhere locally, so I assumed it was the same one. But... I was also kind of hungover the next day.
Right.
Because we drank a lot watching. You can't get through the room sober. It's it's not physically
Why
possible.
Would you do that to yourself?
Exactly. So, you know, when you were like, oh, I brought it over, I'm like, But then I tried it, and still didn't like it neat. But then once we put it on ice.
Yes.
That my hangover was gone. For about a drink.
So it's corn-based. So.
Like everything else nowadays.
Yeah. There you go. It's a corn-based alcohol, so I guess they can't really call it much of anything else.
Moonshine.
Except moonshine.
Or moonshine.
Yeah. But it's really smooth.
It's not crazy strong.
It's not crazy strong. It's only
like 20%?
It's only 40 proof, 20%.
Yeah. That's like a...
It's like gin. Well, maybe a little less than gin.
It's a weak liquor.
Yeah.
It's strong. It's stronger than wine, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot stronger than wine.
Well, wine gets up to 16%.
No, that's true. That's true.
Some sakes get up there in that territory, right?
Yeah, they're usually around 17 to 18.
But yeah, it's usually around that stuff.
So yeah, it's you're right. It's not super strong. And so what we did was take kind of a combination of a couple of cocktail recipes.
No, take credit for it. This is you. I had nothing to do with this.
Well, the recipe I was going with, provided by the Black Button Distillery themselves, called for the moonshine, a muddled orange, and crystallized ginger. Muddled that together.
Muddle.
And then the booze, and then a splash of club soda.
Mm.
And I don't know about you, but club soda is just kind of boring to me.
Yeah, I agree.
It doesn't really add much. It adds like a little carbonation, but that's about it.
I am firmly a tonic guy now.
Yeah.
Which I was not before.
Right. But... And I don't think I do tonic in this. I don't need to add another
quinine
flavor
or
to this.
Quinine or whatever would not. Yeah.
So I thought, and they also have a recipe for a mule with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know what? A little muddled ginger is good. Let's go full ginger. And instead of club soda, we'll throw in some fine Fever Tree ginger beer.
Is that the name of the drink? Full ginger?
Yeah. Or full ginger apple pie? I don't know.
Well, I mean, gingered apple pie, but I just think full ginger is funny. Because it doesn't actually describe the drink much, but it just sounds like...
Full ginger. We'll call it the
bartender,
full ginger.
I'd like to go full ginger, please. Also, I'm apparently from the 1920s.
So we went full ginger, and it's very tasty.
Yeah.
It's very delicious. It's a little sweet, but there's plenty of ginger in it.
You used an antique muddler.
I did. Made that of was metal. Exciting.
Right?
I was afraid it was going to break the glass.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I think it has been or will be a murder weapon someday. It sort of has, like, for a tiny little pestle, it has the heft of a bludgeoning instrument from it, Law and Order, say, or something.
Muddle, she wrote.
Man, what would they say? What would David Caruso say? How could you punnize that? Looks like this man got muddled. Takes off the glasses. Whatever that song is that plays.
It's going to be a tough investigation, but we'll muddle through. No,
he doesn't make... No, that's not bad, but that's not how the joke usually works. It's about the murder.
Well, fine.
No, I'm sorry. I only know the joke construct because I've studied it and said, this is dumb as shit. And I love puns, and I still know this is dumb as shit. So much to talk about. We're going to Toronto.
All right, but that's something that's going to happen.
Yeah, but we can talk a little bit. That. I mean, by the time... Once this airs, we'll have been back, hopefully.
Okay, we should talk about when we get back.
Okay, well, also we have...
Sorry, I'm shooting down your conversation.
Yeah, I'm
going
to move on because I really want to get to...
We're going to run out of stuff. Are we getting to the tick? Or is that...
We can get
later?
To that, but we had a complaint. We had a listener complaint about you.
We did?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Wow.
And it's because you feigned interest in Game of Thrones and it left a very unsatisfying feeling for that listener. That listener was so let down by your lack of interest
by
in Game
feigned
of Thrones.
Interest in Game
your
of,
feigned
Game of
interest
Thrones.
In Game of Thrones.
Okay, I'll come out and say it then. I'm not interested in Game of Thrones.
Well, we know that, though.
I'm not feigning it.
you let me talk about it. You asked questions, but yeah. Your interest was feigned.
I don't want to see it.
I want to see it.
I don't really care much for things that are mostly people being awful to each other.
The last season has turned into like a happy fucking loving. It's the weirdest thing. Like the season finale was almost entirely like, here's all happy things. People you like, they're fucking. People you like, they're kings now. People you like, they have motherfucking dragons.
And I assume that that's all going to come crashing to an end at the end of the...
Well, so they're off book.
Yeah.
Right?
I understand that. Yeah, I know that they've
fire out
strips. They've surpassed Martin's whatever he's written so far, and they're like off in uncharted territory. And like they gotta come up with something.
He gave them the beats; they had a hit. So they're doing like a classic improv with a structure.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, you need to get here, here, and here, but all the in between shit. So they, that's where they started, and they did. By the way, we titled the last episode, or I titled the last episode, "Riding the Shark." Show firmly jumped the shark. Like the time travel since we had that discussion got worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. So like one character was described as a teleporting pinball because he covered like so much ground in one episode.
Did they even explain it? Or is he just no. here, there,
nope.
there?
The directors, they've been getting a lot of flack about it. And the directors and writers are like, we're just trying to get the story done, man. Like they don't have a good excuse for it. And It wouldn't be a problem if they had led up to that. Like last season, if they had spent some time being like, okay, the pace is going to pick up, right? So they're already off book at that point. But it just suddenly, out of nowhere, went like fucking crazy fast. So anyway, season finale was very too satisfying. Mm-hmm. It was a little too satisfying.
It's like, that's a weird thing to say.
There's too much good shit going on here. I don't know. Like a lot of the bad writing kind of got explained, and you're like, ah, it's too pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
It did have a crazy badass ending, like a Game of Thrones moment, which is generally bad. It's like, oh fuck. It ended with an oh fuck. How about that?
Okay.
But it was a really great oh fuck. Big budget oh fuck. But yeah, so we're now torturing this listener because you're once again
playing. I'm not feigning though. I really don't. I'm not.
No,
interested.
You've been letting me talk. If you really, you would have been like, Mike, just stop. You would have just stuck your fist in my mouth and made me stop talking. If you really didn't care, where you weren't feigning interest.
I'm sort of. I'm interested in your reaction to it, but not it itself. There.
Okay.
I'm sure that is completely unsatisfying to our listener who will remain
Ben.
Unnamed.
Who will remain Ben.
Sorry, Ben. I don't care. Sorry, not sorry.
Well, no, you're sorry you offended him. You just don't care about Game of Thrones.
Right, yeah. Right. I care about you, Ben, just not Game of Thrones.
That's to be expected. Sorry, it was weighing heavily on me, Mike. I had to get that off my chest. That you let one of our listeners down.
That's fine. Just one? Really?
Well, really, how many listeners do we have?
Okay. That's probably a significant percentage.
You've offended like 50 to 50% of our listenership that we know of. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, it was a good while it lasted.
Yeah. Well, we had a good run. Now we're back down to Erica. Our
sponsors are going to desert us now.
This episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. Why? Because they sponsor every fucking podcast known to mankind. If I have to listen to both Chris Hardwick and Mark Maron talk about Stamps.com again, I'm going to go crazy. Stamps.com, man. They just fucking cornered the podcast sponsorship market.
Should be sponsored by fucking Black Button Distillery. We've mentioned them enough now.
Should we just send this to them and be like, hey, you should pay us.
They should.
We didn't have a contract, but we just pimped you out so much.
We did. And this is delicious. And you really can't taste the alcohol in this at all.
It's dangerous. Luckily, it's weak because it's really dangerous. Jesus, we're 17 minutes and 54 seconds in this podcast and almost done with my goddamn drink. Fuck.
There's a good amount of the moonshine in that.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to feel it, actually. When I start talking like this, let me know. So, The Tick.
Oh, yeah, The Tick. So, the new version of The Tick, the I guess, mini-season, I don't know, season-lit? Is there a term for these, like, little tiny, five-episode seasons?
But there's more in the season on IMDb. It just hasn't been released yet.
Yes.
I don't know if they're, like, releasing them after they filmed so many or what.
I don't know. So there's only five new episodes. This is the first episode.
So if you're not familiar with it, it was part of Amazon pilot season.
Yes, it was very well received.
Very well received, along with Jean-Claude Van Johnson, which I thought was hilarious.
Peter Serafinowicz.
Mm-hmm.
Plays The Tick, and I think he does a wonderful job.
He does. He differentiates in him enough from Putty's live-action Tick.
Yes.
I don't know what the actor's name is, but we all know he's Putty.
Patrick Warburton.
Yeah, that guy. This show definitely has legs. It seems to be trying more to be actually plot-oriented.
Yeah, okay, so what's different about this, and this is all, this again, it's written by a...
Ben Edlund,
yes, who was the creator of The Tick. Okay. I think he wrote the comic. He definitely wrote the older live action Tick.
Okay.
I think he's the creator of the comic. Pretty sure. I don't know why it wouldn't be.
What's the name of the guy who plays Freddy Krueger? Because I feel like it's similar to Ben Edlund.
England.
Okay.
It's not Ben England, though. It's something England.
It's something completely different. I got you.
Robert England.
Yeah, that sounds right. I feel a little scared hearing that name, so. You keep reaching for your drink and then stopping.
I know. I don't want to chug it all right now. So, Peter Serafinowicz is an English actor, and if you've seen Shaun of the Dead, you've seen him.
Mm-hmm. If you saw Spy, you saw him.
Yes.
If you saw Phantom Menace, you heard him.
Okay. Spaced, he was also in that.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably in a couple of other...
Simon Pegg and the Cordetto movies.
Yeah.
He's also a big voice actor.
He's a big guy. He's big too.
With a big voice.
Yeah, big guy, big voice.
Yeah. He's got it all. He's dreamy.
So yeah, he does lots of voice work. He does lots of accents, and he does an excellent. It's an American accent,
yeah.
But it's very stylized.
Well, yeah.
Very like, tick over the
top. It's like Golden Age superhero Man of Steel way of talking.
And I love it. I think he does a fantastic job with it.
It's a good dichotomy with the guy who plays Arthur, who is way more grounded in mental illness than the other Arthurs were from the cartoon and the other live action show.
Yeah, and that does get to be a little bit of a drag in the first season here because it goes on.
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm sure it will.
And I think they're going to get past that, but they're doing the hero's journey. Did you see that? Was that in the...
Oh, when the tick basically said exactly where he was in the hero's journey? Yeah. I definitely got a kick out of that.
The hero refuses the call.
The call, yeah. I was thinking about that today. you're in phase three. Yeah, good old Joseph Campbell. Yeah, but it's a funny show. It's got very strong characters.
So the big difference to me is the world in which all this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first ones, the cartoon, the comics, the original live action series, it was much more campy, mm-hmm. much more almost like a lighthearted sort of take on superheroes. This is more, for better or worse, of a kind of gritty, nasty, almost trying to be realistic, Watchmen-y sort of world.
But
it's, there are parody elements, comedy elements are there.
Yeah.
But it's much more, I hate the word, but it's much more gritty than...
It's a gritty reboot?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a gritty reboot. It is.
I mean, it still is fanciful and humorous, but then you get, like, a character who randomly, like, just gorily stabs the shit out of, like, six dudes, and there's just blood everywhere. Right.
You know what it reminds me of?
What?
The Boys.
Yeah, I can see that. But not as crass.
It's not that crazy over the top, although Overkill is like...
Well, his name says it all.
Yeah. And he's obviously a take on the Punisher.
Yeah.
Very obviously.
But more sorty than gunny.
Well, yeah, but it's the same sort of idea. He's out for
vengeful,
revenge.
He wants to kill
the bad guys.
But by any means necessary.
Yeah. By whatever the most violent means necessary.
Yeah, pretty much the more blood splattered, the more successful I think he feels.
Yeah. And you know, there's some pretty awful stuff in Arthur's backstory, too.
Yeah, his backstory is, like, comma tragic.
Yeah.
Like, ridiculously horrible to the point of like, I kind of have to laugh because this is ridiculous.
And that's one of the things that reminds me of The Boys.
Hmm.
Because if you remember the Simon Pegg character in The Boys, his girlfriend getting literally
like
ripped out of his...
He's just holding her hands.
Yeah, he's holding her hands after she's been slammed.
Like vaporized almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, by a superhero by accident.
Yes.
Who like doesn't care that he did it.
Right. Yeah. And it's almost the same sort of thing in the pilot episode of The Tick.
Yeah. Collateral Damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We've only seen we watched the second, and so the pilot became the first episode of the season because it got picked up, and then we watched the second and third episodes with you. There's only three more out right now, but the IMDb lists another four, so I don't know if they're gonna roll those out. Maybe they're not doing the Netflix thing where they film all first and then roll them out. They might be doing it in chunks. I don't know,
but it's good. I'm looking forward to once they get past hopefully.
Actually,
doing Arthur's whole, are you finally going to be a fucking hero? Or are you finally going to try to be a hero?
Yeah.
It's getting all tiring. But I like it. I'm going to keep watching, definitely.
It's funny.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny. Sarah Finowitz is great.
Yeah.
And, oh, geez. Oh, my gosh. What's his name?
Jackie
Earle. Yes. Jackie Earle Haley, right?
Jackie Earle Haley. Yes. I always just call him Jackie Earle. Which I realize now is not his name. Yeah, he's very funny. As like the extreme, the top villain.
Yeah, he's really over the top, but like funny and kind of terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, and like they show him randomly having a soft side with other villains. Like yeah, it's
but just still a, like just you know ready to kill people.
Oh yeah, no the drop of a hat. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, he's a comic book villain.
Yeah,
in every sense of the word. No, definitely worth checking out. Very much enjoyed. Yeah, that wishy-washy hero thing was one of the biggest, my biggest problems with Iron Fist, was the dude would just not fucking step up. And I did I tell you that they were going to actually, they were considering, seriously considering an Asian actor to play Iron Fist?
Okay.
And they didn't cast him, but they put him in the show in one episode as a drunken fighter. And he was one of the highlights of the show. And I'm so angry because I'm like, that motherfucker had more charisma in his one scene in one episode of the show than Finn Jones had in the entire 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Of Wah.
That's whitewashing for you.
It's whitewashing for sure, but it's also like, I don't know what their concept was for this character, but it was not thought out very well. Because you can't. I don't know who's going to sit there. I know for a fact that not many people liked it. It's been pretty universally panned. But who wants to sit there and watch their character just wring his hands for 13 episodes, right? What kind of hero is that? Lame as shit.
Yeah.
Nah. It was just constantly resisting the call. That's all it was. Stuck at level 3. But I am excited for Defenders. We're now geared up. I binged on Luke Cage. We finished Iron Fist. So I am 100% in for Defenders now.
So, another one I want to mention that you haven't seen yet, I don't think you've seen it, is Stand Against Evil.
No, you were telling me about this.
And it's the, I can never remember the guy's name. John something from...
Stamos.
No, the guy from Scrubs. The angry doctor from Scrubs.
Yeah, John Riley? John C. Riley?
John C. Riley, no, maybe? No.
McGinley?
Yes, I think
John
that's
McGinley?
It.
John McGinley?
Yes. It's close, if that's not it, but I think it is.
It ends in a Y.
Yeah, and begins with a Mick.
Wow.
What?
I don't know.
I think it does.
Yeah?
Anyway, he's it's Stand Against Evil. He plays a sheriff who basically lost his job because people think he went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really the...
Trope.
Yeah, of course. It's really the evil... underworld demon and witches that are trying to kill him.
The witches!
It's a long grudge that they explain.
The grudge? Quickly. Oh my god.
No, it's a grudge, not the grudge.
Well, yeah, they can't do the grudge. That's trademark, so they can just do a grudge.
Right. So he's paired up with the younger female new sheriff who has replaced him,
mm-hmm.
but is kind of out of her depth when dealing with all this stuff, whereas he is much more the Bruce Campbell type.
I was thinking, so this is Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But with a different actor.
Okay.
With a different actor.
Because there's also Ash versus the Evil Dead, which is still on, as far as I know. So, all right. Well,
but it's good. I like it. I like the actor. I like him in a lot of things. So
it's a good formula.
And he's being that same sort of, you know, curmudgeon-y
asshole.
Yeah.
That's his character.
Yeah. But it's fun. I definitely recommend checking it out. I think that's on Hulu.
Hulu?
It's on one of those things. Either Hulu or Amazon or Netflix. One of them. I don't know. They're all interchangeable for me now. I can't keep straight what's on what.
We subscribed to all of them, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Fire TV's got it. All the streaming devices have them all there. I was blown away by the casting thing from Windows 10. That blew my mind.
Okay. What are you talking about now?
So, I did nothing to set this up. So, back in the day, I had all sorts of different streaming devices and services set up throughout the house, depending on what TV I was on.
Yes.
So, for the PS3...
I remember this well.
So, for the Apple TV, we had one thing, a mirror pod, some. It worked fine.
It worked fine, but it was still a hassle. It was a hassle, like, switching between devices. You were good at it, but there was definitely a learning curve.
But there was like an iPad and our Harmony remote involved. So, I mean, yeah, that's about as complicated as I get at this point. But, yeah, I mean, to someone who doesn't know what they're doing, sure. I'm not saying you. I just mean in general, it would seem complicated to, like, my mom or your mom. And then on the PS3, I had a service called T-versity, which worked fine. But again, it's basically they all use the same concept where you have a streaming server on your computer,
mm-hmm.
and then a, you know, like an app somewhere that puts it on another device, right?
Right.
And I had not set this shit up in a while, and I did a fresh finally install on my computer in December, and hadn't put all the shit back on there, and I got rid of my Apple TV. I gave it to someone because we didn't really need it with all the Fire TVs.
Right.
So I had a whole new set of network devices, but I knew that shit could stream. Like, I knew that the super fancy Oppo could stream Blu-ray player.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just putzing around, and I just happened to right-click on the room, the file for it, and it had cast as an option, which I'd never seen before. And I'm like, that's new. And then...
So you said you're saying file.
Yeah.
Now, where is this? You're
on my computer.
So is this... what kind of file?
Like an MP4.
Just a regular MP4.
Yeah, okay. MP4.
Okay.
So I right-clicked on the MP4s just sitting on my computer. It's mm-hmm. not shared to a network. It's just sitting on my fucking computer. And cast was an option. Again, I have Windows 10. And it's been updated to the whatever the new version of it is. And there was this cast option, and then it just listed a bunch of network devices that I recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and turned on my Blu-ray player, and then that appeared.
Okay.
So I at first I cast it to my new receiver, and it did an audio.
Right.
So it played the audio of the room, which not worth listening to.
No.
In case you're wondering, this as an entertaining, as great as the Zelda Overworld music opening of the room is, because it mm-hmm. is definitely Zelda World music. we've all agreed on that we're watching it. As great as that song is, there's no point in listening to it.
So it does not make a good radio play, is what you're
Would
saying.
Would not recommend it if you are a radio play aficionado or mm-hmm. an admirer of enjoying your life.
Right. So this is not a good movie for someone also who would be visually impaired.
Actually, maybe it would, because they wouldn't have to look at Tommy Wiseau.
Or his pulsating...
So I prepped. We prepped my brother and sister-in-law. I was like, look, okay, listen, there's a lot of sex scenes. They are recycled sex scenes, so you're going to see the same sex scenes over again. There's a water feature, prominently featured. You'll see that a lot. Also, by the way, Tommy Wiseau has a bellows for an ass. And they were like, what? And I'm like, I feel bad telling you this, but focus on Tommy Wiseau's butt cheek.
How can you not?
But I like to draw people's attention to it, and they were like, oh my God, what is that? Because it's like pulsating it's a bellows. It's like an old-timey fucking iron lung kind of thing. It's the weirdest thing. Anyway, long story short, if you have Windows 10, look into this, because I turned on my Blu-ray player. They're all on the Wi-Fi network, but that's as far as I went. And it appeared in the right-click menu for casting. I hit it. I hit play. And it fucking worked. I did nothing but turn shit on. And I was blown away by how much better the networked file sharing and media playing has gotten in the last couple of years, because I kind of lost touch with it.
Smart devices.
Smart devices. Smart motherfucking devices.
So you think that was DLNA?
I suspect. I don't think casting is specific to Android.
No.
I mean, I know Google kind of coined it, but I feel like people use that for
There are multiple ways. Yeah. Multiple ways to cast.
Multiple architectures. Multiple sure. interfaces. But yeah, it says cast, and it works.
All right.
So there's your tech tip of the day. also, rocking shoes. Messiah balance train. There you go. The two interesting scientific tidbits of the day. This is what I have.
So the other thing that we watched... Finally, and it took we probably should have seen this earlier. We still have time. Is that what you're taking? We got plenty of time, don't we?
Yeah, I was just looking. What? I just like to check on the time.
All right.
I looked at my phone the first time, and then I realized I hadn't looked at the time on the. Look, I just drank a lot of the motherfucking moonshine.
All right.
I make pauses and go get some ginger beer to soak up some of that.
So we saw Get Out. We watched Get Out.
Yeah, it was great.
It was very good.
I do not recommend getting out of watching Get Out.
it was very very solid. I thought very. Well put together.
It was a good thriller.
Yes.
With a very strong comedic through line.
Yes.
Which I thought was one of the things that set it apart from just a standard, like, kind of stupid thriller. You know? Yes. Because it could have been dumb.
And one of the movies that I think we compared it with was Rosemary's Baby.
Well, that was one of the movies that influenced it. That and the Stepford Wives. Yeah.
Yeah, Stepford Wives, which also had kind of a weird humor to it, I thought.
I didn't. It's been a long time
since I've seen it.
Well, I think the premise is kind of funny.
It's funny, but really disturbing. Way.
Well, that definitely applies to Get Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of pieced it together, more or less, as a group.
It wasn't really subtle.
the intricacies of it.
You mean what, like, figure out what was going on as the movie was
like happening. What the specific, fuck you, anyway.
Yeah, it was not subtle about where it was going. And I don't mean that as a criticism.
Well, apparently you do of us.
But yeah, we figured it out. But yeah, it was telling us with a giant billboard what was about to happen.
That is, you are so underestimating the average viewer.
No. I'm just trying not to overestimate us.
Okay. Little column A, little column B. How about you underestimate us and overestimate the common viewer? Problem solved.
All right. So maybe we shouldn't go into it in too much spoilery detail.
No, it's I know that we have, yeah. It's well written. Peele wrote it and directed it.
Mm-hmm.
Of Key and Peele fame. Solid direction. Great acting. I really like the main character. I've seen him a couple of times.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah. Because it's a tough balancing act of there's weird shit happening that's borderline supernatural. So how do you react to that without making it ridiculous?
Mm-hmm.
But I think he towed that line really well, while staying sympathetic as the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And his friend was genuinely funny. And man, the TSA must love this movie, because apparently Peele just loves the TSA.
That's
one of the trivia things that Erica read on IMDb. And the TSA gets so many badass shout outs in this movie, which are actually very comical. But yeah, and I liked that for the most part, there was logic. People behave kind of logically, as illogical as the movie was.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think it was a lot. I mean,
well, come on.
When you got down to it, you're like, okay, that's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was.
It goes to crazy town after a while. But yeah. By and large, the way people
I didn't have any problem with that. It was
it's fun. It's fun, yeah. And it reserved that till the very end when it really got... but, the way characters reason, makes sense. It's because, these kind of movies, horror movies in general, are why are you doing that? Why are you running that way? You should be running that way. That kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
It really wasn't a lot of that. People figured shit out in the right amount of time and, for the most part, made fairly intelligent choices, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just weird shit throughout the movie. And then you're like, what the fuck was that? Lots of nice little things that eventually make sense, but are just odd at the time.
Yes. Now, what do you think of the social commentary angle of it?
I mean, in one sense, it's on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe we're talking about two different things. Social commentary.
I'm just throwing it out.
Well, it's weird. I mean, they own up to it really early in the film,
mm-hmm.
but then it turns itself on its head later. So, I don't think it's wise to read too much into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is what it is. If that makes sense. And I think the social commentary is fairly obvious, and they're pretty clear about what they're saying when they say it.
Yeah.
You know? It's not The Wire.
No.
You know what I mean? I think there's a danger in trying to be the social commentary. Yeah, there's social commentary. A good movie has social commentary. It doesn't have to be amazing social commentary. You know what I mean? Well, mm-hmm. What about you? Did you have any specific takeaway?
No, it was... From my perspective, the social commentary angle of it was almost understated, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, it was definitely there, but it wasn't, it was humorous enough that it wasn't super in your face sort of stuff.
It's hard to talk about.
Yeah.
I think our demographic makes it hard to talk about as well.
It does.
I will say this, and I had this conversation with Erica, and I stand by this. I really give props to this movie for having an identity, but being its own thing. And how do you even begin to say this?
I'm not really sure what you mean by that. Having its own identity.
Yeah, I'm trying to word it. I don't know, man. I'm so gun shy. after San Francisco, I'm so gun shy about shit now.
Well, okay, and I think that's, you know, I think that's fair, and I think our viewing of it as four white people sitting in a basement in the suburbs is going to be very different from somebody who's black or has any sort of minority background, where they're used to experiencing prejudice and bias on a regular basis,
which they touch on in the movie but kind of lightly.
Yeah.
What I liked about it was, like, there is a way to do that in such a sense that you recognize it and you internalize it, but it doesn't become the point of the movie. Like, you can still enjoy the movie. You know what it was? It was a movie with an African-American main character or a black main character. You know, I'm actually starting to get really confused about what... No, I'm not joking. I'm actually genuinely confused about what the right word is now. Because I told you what happened to me in Australia, right? When I had a conversation with a Southern African white guy.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, hey, did I tell you this?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I was talking. So his name is Jean. Great guy. Awesome guy. And, you know, I brought this up. I was like, can I ask you something? This is really weird, but... you know, I've been trained and been taught that it's proper to call a black person in America an African American. And he just laughs instantly. He's like, right, okay. So, obviously that doesn't apply because I'd be an African Australian.
Right, sure.
And he goes, yeah, we call, and by we, I mean, you know, the black community in Africa calls themselves black when they need to be addressed by color for whatever reason. So now I'm sort of confused because I've definitely had black or African-American friends who have said, you know, I'm not actually from, I'm not from Africa.
Yeah.
Like, I'm Trinidadian or Moroccan or whatever, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, that's a good point. So I'm actually, like, stereotyping you.
Yeah.
By calling you that. So I'm trying to figure that out. I need to do some research. I need to read some articles.
You do. Watch some videos.
Yeah. But long story short, black main character, black writer, black director, I did not feel like I was being preached to.
I didn't either.
And I think that is really impressive.
Yeah, I didn't feel like, you know, I was being accused, although
there was
definitely
pretty
making
comments.
Making some comments. And there was some stuff aimed at the liberal white elite, I guess.
Which I did enjoy for many reasons. It just towed a line.
I was never like, well, how dare they? That's not right.
Well, I just feel antagonized now. Gosh darn it. I'm going to cry myself to my bed full of money. I get the hype. I get the hype of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it did incredibly well. And I think it was very well deserved because it did a lot that it's hard for a movie to do.
And I just want to... Just take that first scene in it.
Yeah.
Which is a scene in which, I mean, it's the first scene of the movie, so, you know, I'm not really spoiling anything here. But it is a black or African-American, whatever, you know.
The proper parlance now is, yeah.
And he's walking through the suburbs, and we're... at night.
On the phone. Lost.
On the phone. He's lost. Or he's trying to get someplace and it's not working out.
And he's super uncomfortable.
He's super uncomfortable.
And they do a good job of really making you feel like...
Yeah.
Like he's really uncomfortable for a good reason. Like.
Yeah. And you know, and technically this is an environment that is right outside the door here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And watching this character, you know, being so afraid and uncomfortable in what to us is the most familiar of environments,
right,
was very striking to me.
And effective. It's effectively done. And part of it is there's just solid artistry to this movie, right?
Yeah.
The writing, directing, the cinematography. And of course, the way that scene plays out, it, you know, makes you feel uncomfortable. That's the kind of thing. But there's a way to do that. You're like, that was well done. I sympathize with the character, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not easy to do because I'm not black,
mm-hmm.
right? So hats off to that. But then it didn't, like, kind of take me out of the movie either.
No, no.
And that's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So I think that all the praise for that movie is very well done.
And the thing that, going back to that one scene, the thing that that reminded me of
mm-hmm.
was the Key and Peele skit. Have you seen this one where it's the same situation? It's not at night.
Oh, okay.
But it's Key,
mm-hmm.
and he's walking through a white suburban area.
Okay.
And people are, like, giving him looks. And he's obviously very, very uncomfortable. And as he progresses, he can see that there's, like, a police car mm-hmm. that's kind of making its way up from behind him. And then he pulls up his hood, because he's wearing a hoodie, of course. But he pulls up the hood and covers his face with it. And right as the police car drives by, and you see on the side of the hood is the side view of a white face. And the cop just looks over and is like, oh, okay. And they keep on driving. And so he makes his way through with his white guy hoodie. Obviously much different ending than the scene in the movie.
Right, but I wonder if that
scene... I did. Like, it really reminded me of that.
Precipitated, yeah. You know, the idea of this movie. It's a problem. It's a legitimate problem for the Black community. You know? It absolutely deserved. And I... Humor has long been a way for addressing... Just like sci-fi has tackled, you know, progressive social norms in a way that people allowed it. Like the first interracial kiss. Comedy allows you to approach things that are taboo or off limits or too sensitive otherwise. So I think that shit's awesome. Usually.
Usually. Oh, sorry.
I really enjoyed everything I watched that Key and Peele did.
Yeah, even without all the social, looking at any social commentary or anything like that, it's a very good movie.
Yeah. So see it.
So see it. Definitely.
And watch Game of Thrones, unless you're a communist
meh.
Hermit, like a commie hermit. Commie hermit?
And buy Black Button Distillery products.
At least they're fucking moonshine. We're just trying to make money this episode. Yeah. So
It's not just the moonshine, though. It's that the maple bourbon cream.
Oh, yeah, they made that too.
Which
yeah.
is wonderful. Yeah.
That's right. Man, they make good shit.
They do make good shit.
Interesting. I wonder if I can buy stock in them.
Yeah, you should try the bourbon sometime, if you haven't.
There was a maple walnut?
No, that wasn't from them.
Yeah, that's what I had. I didn't have the whatever cream stuff. Or is it bourbon?
Yeah, but the bourbon cream.
Well, that's not bourbon, though. It's bourbon cream.
Well, I know, but they also make bourbon.
All right, well,
they make
I'll try
actual bourbon.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as they don't pour it in cream. Fucking cream. Cash rules everything around me. It's cream. Bourbon is bourbon.
Have some bourbon and get those shoes a-rockin'. What
does that mean? This episode brought to you by Maasai Balance Trainers and booze and stamps.com. We've decided to, this episode, monetize ourselves. So here, help invest in the Buddies in Space brand. And well, actually, don't. Buy any of those products because they're not actually sponsoring us. So
wait until they sponsor us, then buy the shit out of them.
Then the floodgates will open and you may spend your hard-earned money.
We'll give you the signal. You'll know. You'll know when it's time to go spend.
The biz signal? The biz signal? What would our Batman signal be?
I don't know.
Just two heads?
Two heads like drinking back drinking, yes.
Oh, it could be like the comedy and tragedy, but like with booze. Like one of us is laughing drinking, the other one's crying drinking.
Yeah.
Yes, we have
this. We got a new logo.
Make it so. Wait, neither of us can draw.
Nah.
Well, shit.
Well, there's always clip art. We'll piece it together, by God.
Yeah.
Was there something else? We'll talk about Toronto when we get back. Speaking of other future things, I finally sent off the
flying car.
No,
You said future thing.
Not
got excited.
That far in the future.
Oh, okay.
No, we're like maybe a couple of weeks in the future.
Did you send your saliva to a sunstream laboratory?
Yeah, we spit in a test tube thing. Mm-hmm. Not really mm-hmm. a test tube, but it looks kind of like a test tube.
It's a sealing, self-sealing test tube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And send it off to get analyzed.
To get genealized.
Yes. To find out what horrible genetic diseases I am predisposed to.
You're going to find out your racial mix by continent and country. It's going to be awesome. You're going to find out your haplogroups, which still mean nothing to me,
mm-hmm.
but they're interesting. You're going to find out if you have any caveman genes.
Ooh, strains. Nice.
Yeah. Not everyone has them.
They're like made of saber tooth skin?
Yes. Okay. But the comic book character Sabretooth. It's a very confusing, like, weird path you have to follow. That's where the haplogroup.
Did they call them jeans back then, too?
Yeah.
All
right. Well, they called them denim back then.
Oh.
Yeah. Ugnaught really liked denim, and so he gave it to his tribe, and then the tribe became the denim tribe, and then it caught on, and then they started mixing it with Sabretooth fur, and then so that's where Sabretooth jeans came from. And then the comic book character Sabretooth co-opted that. He's actually very, very, he wears really nice denim, but he has so much fur over his costume that it's very few shots where he's like fighting Wolverine where you actually see the jeans under the fur.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that.
I don't know. What I do know is that they're almost always fighting in some sort of snowy environment.
Yeah, because...
Because what...
Reasons.
Because, no, he has to wear that fur vest or jacket or whatever, right? That fur-lined...
So that's funny because that makes me think of something funny about Game of Thrones. So in the season finale,
so he doesn't look good in summer wear. Is the problem.
It doesn't make sense? Well, no, but I mean he doesn't wear shorts because he wears jeans.
Yeah,
as I've just explained. They recently announced. So did you hear about the IKEA thing with Game of Thrones?
No.
So all these characters are in the frozen north, wear these giant like kind of collar capes of fur. Uh-huh. But it was recently revealed by the costume designer that she just went to IKEA and bought a whole shitload of rugs and then turned them into... So IKEA, as a joke, right after that, released their IKEA brand of instructions, but it was how to take one of their rugs and cut it and make it a Jon Snow cloak.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's funny.
So now I'd cosplay people all around
all
the
I'm saying
world
is,
or,
on her way to or from Toronto, yeah. I may be picking up a fucking, you know, Game of Thrones rug. But anyway, so like this costume, just like that same situation, makes perfect sense. They're wearing like 500 layers of fur mm-hmm. in the frozen north, but they all in the season finale go down south to like the tropics.
They still wearing fur.
He's still wearing fur. And Eric is like, Jon Snow must be really hot. And I look and it's like, everyone's, you know, lightly dressed and he's just in all of this fur. And I'm like, how did I not notice that he looks really overdressed right now? Like, did no one be like, hey, bro. Maybe Dit's like 6 or 7 layers. You can keep the fur. It's fine.
Yeah, this is my look. It's my thing.
He's a very like stoic character. So you're like, no, I must dress like this for the honor of the North. The wall must stand and I must sweat my balls off. He doesn't.
Of course, it's completely unrealistic because we know whenever somebody from the North goes down South, they're the first ones to like strip down to shorts and a t-shirt. Even if it's like 40 degrees out.
Oh, yeah.
The guys from the people from the north are going to be running around in shorts.
Fuck yeah. You're from Western New York and it's 40 degrees out. You're in your bathing suit. You're in like fucking Crocs at most. Fuck yeah. I told you yeah. Australia was hilarious. It's their winter. I'm like, I'm dressed for spring. Maybe fall.
So if they get Jon Snow wearing some swim trunks and Crocs, I will fucking watch every single episode of that.
Now, you've seen the actor who plays Jon Snow.
Probably. I don't know.
No, I know you've seen him.
Okay.
Because he was the guy in Silent Hill 2.
Oh, okay.
That stupid
it's been a long time
boyfriend
since I've seen
guy.
That.
It's forgettable. Yeah. Like most of that movie.
The young boyfriend guy?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was Jon Snow. That was years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. God, that movie sucked. Even with the pyramid head crazy scissor nurse fight, it still sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Still bad.
Sorry.
It's okay. I still hate Zelda. Just I'm just gonna provide my if I hate Zelda today a forecast every.
Did we mention that last time? Oh, yeah. I don't know. You've been hating Zelda for a while. Did you try it again and like nope, still hate it?
Nope. Yeah. I tried it at one point. I was like nope. I tried to show Simon, and he's like the most enthused kid about everything. And he was like, "Daddy, please, can we play Horizon Zero Dawn?" He goes, "I want Anoy." Because he says Aloy's name Anoy, so he just goes, "Daddy, please play Anoy, please play Anoy." I'm like, "You're right, son. This is a terrible game, and I'm bored shitless."
All right, so let's end on this. Okay. What'd you do this past weekend besides watch something with us?
I did want to talk about that. Yes. There we go. We took Simon to his first ever movie theater movie.
Yes.
And because we're badass hipster parents.
Yes, you are the most badass hipster parents.
We took him to a 1986 Miyazaki movie as his first movie theater movie. Nice. He loved it.
Of course, it had to be dubbed because he's probably not ready to read subtitles yet.
At 3.5? Yeah, no.
Not quite.
No. We took him to see Castle in the Sky. He was devastated when I showed him to... So I think I was explaining this to you and this blew your mind.
Okay, so what's... go ahead.
That how, like, children now are used to just having, like, access to everything they want to watch.
Yes.
Like, because you hadn't thought about that, right, when I was explaining this to you.
Right, because you were talking about, like, you're reading a book about something.
Yeah.
It's well, can I watch this?
Yeah.
And I guess you can.
Actually. Yeah, most of the time you can. So, like, we'll read them, like...
Immediately.
And it was like, well, yeah, you haven't really watched any TV today. Sure, we can turn on this movie you've never seen before that I don't own, but here you go. And I'm not doing anything illegal, so fuck you all. Disney movies are the only tricky thing, but we happen to own some of them. So, like, Incredibles was one of the few times where I busted out the DVD.
Right. There's probably none that you can't just buy online or buy streaming immediately.
Disney, no. Castle in the Sky is really fucking hard to get, though. Huh. I hope you guys do own it, because I need to, like... borrow it because he was so that's what happened today. He was devastated because he's like, can I watch Laputa Castle in the Sky? And I'm like, I don't think so, buddy. And he was like, what? Like, I'll look, you can sit here and I'll show you, I'll go to all the places we watch stuff. Amazon doesn't stream it, you can't buy it streaming.
Wow.
Netflix doesn't have it, Hulu didn't have it. And he was just like, I'm like, buddy, I will try to get it from Uncle Smeg and ML. There's no way to get it.
Does not make any sense.
No, but that's it's weird.
Now.
It's not even a spoiled thing. It's just the world the kids live in now is a world where we have streaming access to most shit.
That does kind of sound like a spoiled thing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, most people have it. It's not
I'm just saying.
Well, I'm saying we don't subscribe to all these things. Spoiled by society. Kid. Right, yeah. It's spoiled by world. Access.
Yes.
But yeah, it is strange.
So you took him to the film.
You took him to the film?
Did he know what he was in for here? Did you explain what was going to happen?
No, we told him it was a big, really big screen. We bought him the popcorn. Mm-hmm. He loved the chair that moved with the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
He played with that a lot. I was afraid he was going to annoy people, but no one seemed to care. But yeah,
were there a lot of kids there?
No.
What?
Yeah, we were like, well, the dubbed Miyazaki must have a lot of kids, right? Like,
yeah.
No.
Huh.
He was like the only kid there.
Aw.
So weird.
That is weird. I mean, No, it's dubbed. I wouldn't go.
Yeah, exactly. I was looking around like these people.
Because I'm that guy.
These people must not have gotten tickets to the...
I'm that guy.
The subbed one. Because they do, if you're not aware, the Miyazaki Fest all year, they do a dubbed and then a subbed. Like, one day is subbed and one day is dubbed for each of his classic movies. But yeah, this is the first Studio Ghibli film, which I didn't realize, or Ghibli, I don't know how to say it. And apparently Disney's tried to bury it. There's a very weird history to it.
Huh, I didn't know that.
It wasn't even dubbed until 1999, and it wasn't available anywhere until in the U.S. until 2003. And Disney said something about Disney bought the rights, and they didn't want... Studio Ghibli didn't want reverse importation to become an issue, like some crazy, nonsensical thing. And the fans were like, we think Disney's just trying to bury this movie for some reason. But it was really good. You've seen it, right?
I don't think I've seen it.
It's really good.
There are a few of them that I haven't seen. I think that's one of them.
If you have not, and unfortunately, it's extremely hard to watch. It's hard to find.
Yeah, I think we actually have it.
I hope you do. I genuinely hope you do.
You got this, possibly not entirely legal, DVD collection.
So you bought a collection from somewhere, and you don't know.
Let's just say Toronto.
Sure, Toronto's a big place.
It used to be that you could go into Toronto. And there would be, like, any number of these places that would just sell...
VD-ROMs?
Bootleg DVDs and stuff. And they were There were tons of them. You know, mostly in Chinatown. Sure. Pretty much all in Chinatown.
Right.
And for years we would go there, and it was, I mean, it was cool for us because we could get all these like Japanese, Chinese, Hong Kong, Korean movies that we couldn't really, we wouldn't be able to find otherwise.
Sure.
It was years ago.
Right.
And that was neat. We got a bunch of them. A lot of them suck, but you know, you find
Well, what
some
are you
gems.
Spending on these movies?
Not much. Like $4 or $5. But they are, 1 year, all of a sudden, they were just gone.
Gone, yeah.
All of them were gone.
Yep. Trademark enforcement.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure it's for the best because I can probably get a lot of these movies much easier now.
In higher quality.
And much better quality.
And the actual owner of the rights.
Yeah. And
usually Disney is getting the money from it.
Totally in favor of that.
Yeah. I have long been a supporter of just buying the fucking thing in the highest resolution and audio quality possible.
Mm-hmm. What I was getting at is mm-hmm. that there's this collection of Studio Ghibli or whatever films that came off of a Laserdisc collection.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So there's this bootleg DVD set that was taken from the Laserdisc set.
Mm-hmm. Which for a long time was the highest definition of form of,
which was,
of
and
a movie.
Which for a good another long time was the only way to get some, the only place that some of these Studio Ghibli movies were released.
So
was on
weird.
That Laserdisc.
Why? Who looks at that and is like, if we're going to only pick one format, I want the Laserdisc. Because this
well,
is
it
gonna,
was year. I mean,
this is going to catch on.
This was years and years ago.
I know, but.
And I guess, you know, when. Maybe even pre-Disney picking them up. I don't know. Probably was.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so.
So it was transfers from the Laserdisc.
Yes. So I'll let you borrow those.
Yeah. Yeah, Castle in the Sky, and I was saying this to Erica, and she didn't understand because she didn't watch anime until she was in her early 20s, but like, there's a distinct feeling I remember when I started watching anime of like, it's excitement, right, of watching something like fun, but it's also like this kind of hopeful sense of adventure and like, and mm-hmm. we kind of talked about this, and Miyazaki's really good about this, but like this movie, I haven't had that in a while, and I've watched anime for, you know, a while, haven't had that feeling in a long time, and it might have been because I was like, I kept looking at my kid and watching his reaction, and there were times when he just had this huge grin on his face, like watching stuff.
Mm-hmm. There's a sense in a lot of his films where like, I don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah,
this could go anywhere.
There's a flight of fancy and some legit. There's a lot of danger, especially in this movie. I was like, how are these fucking kids surviving this shit? They should have been dead like 100 times over. But yeah, really fun movie, and even the dubs, you know, were not terrible. I haven't watched the dub in I don't know how fucking long, but it was still fun. And again, like I kept looking at my kid, and he would look over me sometimes and smile, and he was eating popcorn and playing mm-hmm. with the chair. And it's fun. I'm definitely getting to that point where I get to enjoy things through my kids' eyes now, and it gives a different lens than I would have normally. So
that's cool.
I'm still jaded, but it lightens it a bit.
So he had a good time. He didn't, you know, flip out or anything. He wasn't upset.
The only thing fucking flipped out about is there was a fucking Terminator gun game in the lobby.
In the lobby.
So we let him play one. We got there really early. So we let him play once to make him happy. And then he didn't want to not play. And we're like, all right, well let's play one more time in the way out if you're good throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was. He was great. I mean, 3.5 is tough to get through like an hour and 45 minute long movie. Plus,
yeah.
It was a shorts festival before it that were really not good for kids. Like the first one was really fucking disturbing. And like Eric and I were like, and Simon was like, what just happened? so this, it's like a 2 minute film. This like super lazy space version of like FedEx is delivering packages to planets
mm-hmm.
and like autopilots its way to this little tiny planet. And the guy gets out and he's got this tiny package and he's like a magnifying glass to see.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking around and then it cuts down to the ground and like he's on a tiny planet, but the people are tiny. So
okay.
It's like a massive world to them, right? That's like our planet size in their mind. And this giant destructive force is like just walking around like blithely just killing tons of them. And it keeps showing people like, ah, and then they just his footsteps and then it's just a mile of like nothing. And you're like, what the fuck? And so he like drops his soda cup and then it's just slowly rolling and destroying the city. And the guy he's supposed to deliver the package to is like running from it. And then he kicks the cup. He kind of starts to realize something's wrong and he like kicks the cup and like the dude, the little alien guy stuck to it. So he goes flying off. So then like he get the dude gets annoyed and he gets back into his ship to leave and he loses the package. And so he's trying to decide to mark the mission, like the package delivered or not. And he keep going back and forth. And he just marks it delivered because he's an asshole. And then after this, so he, like the world is rejoicing. They see the ship lifting off the ground and are all like, yay. And then his fucking thrusters turn on and incinerate the entire planet. So my kid, like Simon knew, like he could kind of tell what was going on. And so we're like, don't worry about it. Like, yeah, did not need to see that. Like, why in a Miyazaki leader?
Yeah, that's not anything like any Miyazaki film ever.
No, it was just mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of weirdly upsetting. Yeah. Not going to lie. But that was the biggest hiccup. After that, it was...
Well, hopefully you forgot about it.
I think he did.
But probably not, and that's probably imprinted on him now.
And when I'm paying for his psychology bills, years from now, it'll be that fucking
I'm
short.
I'm afraid of FedEx people, and I don't know why.
Everywhere I step, I'm killing tiny creatures. We have shown him Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Oh. That didn't stick the way this might have. Yeah. So, I recommend Castle in the Sky as an adult. Great movie. My kid loved it. You know? Two thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
And three-year-olds love reclining chairs with, you know, mechanical adjustment buttons.
Yeah.
He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Like, I would be watching a movie at something here. I'd look over, he'd just be like jerking backwards very slowly, like smiling, like hitting the button, stopping, hitting the button, stopping. I'm like, all right, let's see where this is going. You are...
S. Michael Smith, you are...
Drunk. Am Michael Carassi.
Already? Wow.
No, I'm just tired.
We got so many people reading that. We don't need to read it.
Yeah, though. You're right. I just realized that as I grabbed it. Cue outro.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit StolenDress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books.
I don't know if I should just eat this muddling with my spoon or what.
I kind of want to like pour a little bit of ginger beer in.
You could, we have plenty of ginger beer.
Like that's I think I'm gonna do.
I'm gonna have a bite of muddled ginger.
How is it?
It's ginger.
You're just eating a giant piece of ginger.
Yeah. It's crystallized ginger. I mean, it's edible. It's, people eat it like candy. But it basically is candy.
Can they snort it?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that. Don't snort crystal ginger, kids.
Don't anything crystal. Don't snort.
Yeah, just don't snort crystals. Even dark crystals.